Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute.
Today, we're talking about the future of hemp fiber processing, and we are joined by the founder and CEO of Canadian Industrial Hemp Corporation, Mr. Robert Zinner. Robert, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you very much, Eric, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, we feel the same way, and Bob, I know we've done a lot of podcast episodes. We haven't talked a lot to real experts in the hemp fiber processing space, and maybe that's because the hemp fiber processing space is a very new space, even though we know, Robert, you've been doing it for a long time. This is a topic that is getting a lot of traction here in the United States, but people still have a lot of questions, and there's a lot of gaps that need to be filled. So maybe to set the stage here, we know that you had a background in the wood industry for a number of years, which makes sense because that inner part of the hemp stock is kind of a wood alternative, that herd that can be used for paper pulping and construction materials, a whole list of wood replacement options. So give us a brief history of your background in the wood industry and ultimately how that translated into a career in the hemp fiber processing up in Canada.
With pleasure, Eric. So it started back in the 80s. I was working in the family lumber and building material distribution business. And in order to get deeper market penetration and be more competitive, we added secondary wood processing into our mix. And after a few years, we wanted to improve the margins further. And I ended up doing some research and engineering at the time, and came up with the fact that General Electric factory automation had just completed in 1984 the world's first completely computer-driven manufacturing operation in upstate New York with their locomotive assembly plant. And that became of great interest to me. And after discussions with GE, we partnered in the development of a computer-driven or computer-integrated manufacturing, as it was called, system, driven by AI and some optical scanning capabilities at the time. Well, that process went over a number of years. In the meantime, GE moved on from factory automation to finance. And in 1991, I patented the OptiStress system alone. Moving forward, we built a new facility in our operations in Toronto, Canada. And what we were able to demonstrate from the technology that we developed with GE was that we could reduce production costs 50%, increase value added over 100%, with the net impact on gross margins of about 250%. And with that in mind, we were also able to get more dependable, consistent quality in our production. From the time our new facility opened in 1997 up to 2000, we were able to increase our sales from $37 million to $240 million a year. On the basis of that, I received a call in 2016 from a senior bureaucrat in the Alberta government, who I had worked with doing my forest products market research for the OptiStress system. And that had been 30 years earlier. We had not spoken since. But he had remembered my focus on utilization and on optimizing the value of the product that we created in the wood processing side. And on that basis, he now is a senior bureaucrat in the Alberta government, invited me to attend with the Alberta government to a conference in China in the Heilongjiang province, which is the main research area of the country for hemp research. And they were asking me to go because of my background with AI and fiber in terms of wood optimization. And the question the Alberta government had for me was whether or not, in my opinion, AI would have an impact on the hemp decortication industry. So I went to China, and I was very impressed with the way the Chinese respect and value the fiber. But I quickly realized that it was something which would just not translate directly here in North America, simply because of the huge labor component. And on that basis, immediately recognized that there was an opportunity for AI. And as soon as I got back to Canada, I started Canadian Industrial Hemp. And we have been moving forward in order to develop a completely computer-driven smart factory for hemp stock decortication and fiber optimization. And the intention is very clear, just as it was in the wood industry: increase our margins, increase our production flexibility, lower our costs, give us greater consistency of quality and dependability. And we have now got a global patent pending on our smart stock system. And we're very comfortable that the technology there will have a huge impact on the decortication industry. And in fact, our technology includes the world's first automated quality control system for hemp bast fiber. So that's how I entered into the world of hemp. And that's the steps that we've taken. For the last year and a half, we focused on our product and market development. And I'm very pleased to say that at this point, we have completed the development of our first biocomposite pellet formulation. And we are working with a major Ontario-based thermoplastic producer to commercialize that for their specific needs.
Well, geez, Robert, what haven't you done in this space in your time? That's pretty impressive. And again, thank you for joining us. I kind of want to take a step back to what Eric talked about a few moments ago, and that was the idea of fiber from the hemp plant. And it's something we've always known, but it's almost like farmers in the United States in particular have resisted going to fiber and or grain, but fiber in particular from the hemp plant. We know about the fiber. We know the infrastructure, as you point out, that's required to decorticate and separate the fiber. But it seems to me that we've almost intentionally avoided, as a country, in terms of an agricultural industry and the farmers, going to the farmer as if it's too simple or just not exciting at all. But as you point out, there's a number of uses, and fibers, no matter what the uses, whether it's textile, industrial, or otherwise, there's a huge market and need for them. And the hemp plant has been found historically to produce extraordinary fibers for a variety of reasons. But here's an observation I want to get your reaction to, and that is, it seems to me that the United States, everybody's going for the, you know, the big shiny objects: CBD, hemp flower, CBG, CBN, now Delta 8, instead of just focusing in on the ag portions of the plant or using the plant holistically. And now the European Union, which has had fiber and grain historically, is almost going backwards now, where it's focused on CBD production, all the while, just like the drummer in a good band, Canada's sitting in the background, beating the fiber drum, beating the grain drum.
It's not true. No, you got to stop there, because that's a myth. The fiber operations in Canada are very limited. The value chain, the supply chain is completely inoperable. People think that because it was legalized in Canada in 1998, of course we must have advanced. Well, the reason that the Alberta government contacted me in 2016, which was 18 years after hemp had been legalized, was they couldn't understand why everybody had been so excited when hemp had been legalized, that there was going to be all this fiber. And in the meantime, only three small-scale operations had opened in Alberta, one of which was the Alberta government's hemp research facility. And what I must tell you is by 2016, the other two had gone bankrupt. So the Alberta government wanted to understand, what is it going to take to create an effective industry? You know, there's all this excitement about hemp fiber even today, about all the great products, about all of this, about all of that. But you see, What people don't seem to appreciate is it's all about cost effectiveness. It's all about quality consistency. And these are the pieces that everybody seems to want to ignore, but they're the critical elements because they represent quality in the marketplace. And no large-scale commercial producer is going to use hemp or anything where he can't provide consistent quality. So, you know, at this particular point, the United States is no further ahead than Canada. Canada is very big and has done very well on the seed side. But on the seed side, you get a different element for the fiber processing. On seed, you're lucky. They say statistically you get 1 to 1.5 tons of stock per acre when you're planting for seed, because the plants are spaced apart, because you want the sun's force, the life force, to go into the actual cones, into the to make more seed. When you go for fiber, you're going to get statistically 3.6 to 12 tons per acre. You're completely redefining the economics that you are focused on. The reason that, you know, it hasn't gotten hold of North America has nothing to do with anything other than lack of market. I mean, nobody's going to start really pushing. I mean, some have, and they're, you know, some will survive and some won't. Without having an established market in place. So the reality is going to be, this is an evolving industry. But the second thing that I emphasize that people appreciate is that, like any new industry, innovation will be forthcoming. And the prices that are in the marketplace today, in my estimation, within 3 to 5 years, will be 25% higher than what they will be down the road. So people better be, you know, factoring into their pro forma where this market is actually going and how they're going to be cost effective and competitive at that time.
So Robert, what's it going to take for North America to participate in a fiber supply chain derived from industrial hemp, both in terms of infrastructure, but also acreage? Is there a magic number?
Well, the magic number for what?
Acreage. What is it going to take for the infrastructure? What kind of infrastructure do we need? How vast in North America for us to be, North America to be a player in the fiber derived from hemp market, number one? And number two, is there a magic number for hemp acreage that would signal success?
Well, you know, when it comes to hemp acreage, it's interesting because CIHC is going to be announcing its vision. Its forthcoming mission and vision in the next couple of weeks in an article which I wrote, which is going to be released in Hemp Today Journal. And the vision is that growing 50 million acres of hemp would change the world. And that 50 million acres is global. So growing 50 million acres of hemp globally would change the world. And from my point of view, if you look at hemp in terms of its opportunity to create jobs, in terms of its opportunity to move regenerative agriculture forward, the circular economy forward, giving people a better appreciation of how all the pieces of nature are there actually for us to utilize in a proper and productive manner, we're going to go much further in terms of our environmental, sustainable, and cost-effective solutions to many of the environmental issues which are plaguing the world.
Well, 50 million acres is that's quite a vision to have, Robert. And the reason I think it is, and I think Bob, kind of the point that you're getting at is that we're seeing this, and I believe you're saying that you've seen it in Canada as well, but it's certainly kind of the feeling here in the United States. There's a bit of a chicken and egg issue that we're having on the fiber side. While there's a lot of excitement and a lot of potential with these end uses, particularly the sustainable and renewable potential that that you're speaking of, it's going to take a competitive price to get farmers to grow this, to grow hemp for fiber. And that price point is, I kind of believe, what is challenging, because as you said earlier, for hemp fiber to really find a footing in the market, the price has to be comparable to what it's going to replace. In other words, you're not going to get the biggest manufacturers out there to adopt hemp fiber if the price is too high. However, the farmers, at least here in the United States, aren't going to grow hemp for fiber unless they're getting paid a pretty good price on it right now. They're not going to grow it for a commodity price, which is what...
I understand all that. And I want to point out something really fundamental. You know, if you were to build the lowest cost car in the world today off of a production line in your garage, it would cost as much as a Rolls Royce. And the reality being that we need to focus on automation, intelligent automation. It's being used in every manufacturing operation that's being unveiled today, whether that's chemical or discrete manufacturing. AI-driven systems, I mean, the beauty of an AI-driven system is that you are able to actually monitor, control, and maintain up to 100,000 systems in real time when you're using AI. And that type of precision consistency ensures that not only do you have higher productivity, lower costs, better quality, but more important is that you're actually going to have jobs that are protected, jobs that are well-paying. In our pro forma, not one of our jobs shown at less than $17 an hour with 24% full benefits. And even paying our employees fairly and reasonably, we will still generate on our $50 million of annual revenue per facility, 47% EBITDA, which is projected to be $22 million a year.
Robert, what's it going to take, or what makes this happening? A scenario where the automobile manufacturers that have interior paneling with hemp specifications built in, and most of that paneling is produced presently in the northern parts of Mexico. What's it going to take for hemp to replace or be utilized for that effort?
Well, first of all, what it's going to take is to be cost effective. And, you know, we certainly would have a benefit with the North American or the manufacturing facilities in Canada and the U.S. Supplying them here rather than from Mexico. What it's going to take, though, is large scale, I believe, AI-driven systems. It's not going to be any different than any other type of manufacturing environment. You need to be cost effective. And all of the work that we have done has demonstrated that in all of the major market opportunities that people are looking at for hemp products, you know, the low-cost producer is going to be the most successful. And first of all, we believe that there's a huge market out there. And, you know, people are forgetting that when people start to grow hemp just for biofuel, there's going to be huge acreage required to fulfill that. And I believe that that's going to be a terrific opportunity that is going to open up over the years. And the economics of everything, you know, people, to pay the farmers properly is not a problem. The spread between your expenses and your revenues are high enough. So the other thing that we do to increase that spread is that we don't put stock at one end and have at the other end come commodity bass fibers and commodity herd. What we do is that we integrate our processing directly with our secondary production. So we put stock in one end and we get finished products like hemp-based biocomposite pellets and cottonized hemp fibers out the other end. So by moving up the value chain, we actually are able to get more gross margin. But by doing it using our system, we're able to actually reduce the cost of production such that we can do primary and secondary production at about a 25% to 35% lower cost than a conventional operation the same size as ours would be able to achieve.
Well, I want to make sure that we're understanding what you're saying completely and understanding the historical context of it too, coming back to this trip that you took to China, which is we're not going to have a competitive hemp fiber market if our processing of the hemp stock relies on a lot of manual labor. That what you are really proposing and what you have really been crusading is an automated approach to the processing of the hemp stock in order to reach these you know, larger scales and these price points that are going to make sense to get hemp fiber out into a larger market, whether it be for the automotive industry, construction materials, or the textile industry. But I want to come back really quickly to this 50 million acres that you mentioned. And you mentioned that as a global figure. And you may be able to shed light for us on what the global acreage for hemp is right now, so we can see just how much work there is to do to get to that 50 million number. But in the context of other ag commodities, while 50 million might sound like a whole heck of a lot, Robert, give us a sense of how that number compares to the global acreage right now of corn, wheat, soy, other ag commodities that are feeding into these existing supply chains.
Well, I can tell you that just as a quick example, soy is grown in 220 million acres globally. Soy is an excellent crop, but what it provides is strictly the seed that's used for the food. Hemp, meanwhile, is used for its seed, for food. It's used for its chemical content, and it has huge uses for its fiber. So no rational person, just looking at soy alone, can explain to me why hemp should not be a crop globally grown in 50 million acres. Then when you look at corn and wheat, and you're looking at 40 million and 80 million acres respectively, you begin to appreciate the fact that, in fact, hemp should be grown 50 million acres. And the beauty is that it can be grown in so many climates around the world that it's certainly not unrealistic.
And if I understand you correctly, what you're kind of saying, and I know, Bob, this has been something that you've been talking about for a long time, with these other ag commodities, these other crops that are grown just all around the world in huge numbers, they kind of have single purposes. But with this crop, with this plant, we're talking about multiple uses coming off of a single crop, which, to your point, it just makes sense. And really transitioning these acres over from corn, from soy, over to hemp, it doesn't have to be all overnight. We're not going to reach 50 million acres very quickly, but
I'm saying 15 years. I'm saying 15 years. But the other thing that I want to point out is that you don't need to replace acreage. I mean, most people have no idea of how many acres of good agricultural land are not planted each year for different reasons. But the reality is we could find easily 50 million acres around the world for growing hemp.
We just got to find them. Well, Robert, we thank you for joining us. You know, we know you put out excellent content on LinkedIn. You share a lot of your thoughts on all of these different market forces and what needs to happen in order to see this industry come into full fruition. For anybody who's interested in learning more and keeping up with Robert, you can follow the Canadian Industrial Hemp Corporation at cihcorp.com. And Robert, we thank you so much for your time today and bringing your insights on this developing hemp fiber market to the Hoban Minute. Thank you so much, sir.
I thank you very much for the opportunity. I enjoyed talking to you, and have a wonderful day.
You as well. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.